Welcome. I'm Hanat Baba, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Following the mass shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut last month, we hosted a show to respond to the events, and we talked about how our society is dealing with gun violence. Well, a listener called in that day to tell us that her brother, who is a former infantryman, is behind a, quote, responsible gun ownership bill. So we decided to have another conversation about guns, and we invited that caller's brother, Philip Young, to join us today. We wanted to have a conversation that goes beyond the superficial and really explores the complexities between the extreme views of, on the one hand, the National Rifle Association, and on the other hand, the idea that we could rid the world of guns completely. Yesterday, President Obama appealed to the nation to curb gun violence and laid out a plan for that. According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, there are more than 30,000 gun-related deaths in the United States each year. For every person who dies from a gunshot wound to others are wounded, there are 12 mass shootings in the U.S. in 2012 alone. And though President Obama has supported one, we still don't have a ban on assault weapons, those guns designed to kill many people in a short period of time. But it's not the majority of gun owners that are opposed to gun regulations. Gun owners have become synonymous with the NRA, which has significant lobbying power in Congress, but many actual gun owners are much less absolutist about the Second Amendment, and if significant federal gun regulation is going to happen, if it will happen, it will need their support. So today we reach out to you, our listeners, gun owners and non-gun owners alike, and let's have an open conversation about solutions to the violence that we see. What is a responsible way to own and use a gun? What responsibility does the government have in regulating who can obtain a gun and what kind? How should our laws and policies around gun ownership reflect those values? Given this can be such a polarizing issue for so many in the country, what are our common denominators? There's got to be some. What can we agree on? How do we decrease the violence and gun-related deaths? And I also want to mention here that there'll be a panel discussion about gun laws this evening at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco at 6 o'clock. So let's meet our guests for today. Joining us is Juliette Leftwich. She's the legal director of the Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence, formerly Legal Community Against Violence, a national law center dedicated to preventing gun violence. The organization was founded by lawyers in the wake of the 101 California Street Assault Weapons Massacre in downtown San Francisco back in 1993. Juliette is author of several publications about gun violence, including 10 Myths About Gun Violence in America and Addressing Gun Violence Through Local Ordinances, a legal resource manual for California cities and counties. Juliette is also a member of the American Bar Association's Standing Committee on Gun Violence and Association of Bay Area Government's Youth Gun Violence Task Force. And also with us, as we said earlier, is Philip Young, who's a colonel who's served nearly 30 years in both the active Army and Army Reserve. He completed two combat tours, one during Desert Storm in 1991 and one in Operation Iraqi Freedom in 2004. Philip has been on the receiving end as well as the delivering end of weapons. He's also a graduate of the U.S. Army War College with a master's in science in strategic studies. Master of Science in Strategic Studies, and he says this education gave him insights into the political system and strategic decision making. And we also want to hear from you today, especially the gun owners. If you own a gun, if you know someone who owns a gun, we really, really want to hear from you today. The number to give us a call at is 866-798-8255. Talk. That's 866-798-8255, or email us your comments at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And firstly, Juliette and Philip, I'd really want to get a reaction for President Obama's appeal yesterday and his plan. Just kind of overall, what did you feel? What did you get when you heard that? Let's start with Juliette.
Well, we were extremely pleased with the proposals that President Obama announced and very encouraged by his leadership. Our nation's gun laws desperately need to be reformed, and we believe President Obama's plan is an important first step.
Okay, and Philip, like when you were listening to President Obama, what went through your head?
First of all, good morning, and thank you for inviting me to discuss this important topic. There were many measures that I agreed with that the president has put forth. There are some that I don't fully agree with. I, in light of the massacre at Newtown, a very unfortunate incident, there's definitely a need for greater action on the part of the government.
You're just not sure it's what he laid out yesterday.
Well, some of the things he laid out, I'm sure of. But there's other things that I think need to have further discussion. Not move as quickly as he has, although it's an incident that does demand quick action. But I still think that our congressional representatives and senators have a requirement and a mandate to talk with their constituency and find out from the constituencies what would be acceptable in their communities. And I think, you know, as New York State has already taken measures to implement state laws, I believe states should have the initiative in instituting their own laws, as well as what Juliet mentioned, municipalities. I fully agree with that concept, but I also agree with responsible firearms ownership.
So bringing it down to the local level.
Based upon what the demands are within a local community. Certainly there are federal regulations which can be imposed, but I think in order to adequately enforce responsible firearms ownership, that in a lot of instances it does need to be taken down as far as the municipal level, yes.
Mm-hmm. Juliet, yeah, go ahead.
I would agree with the issue of local control and how important that is, because different communities do have different needs when it comes to gun violence, particularly as they divide among along rural and urban lines. Unfortunately, though, many states have preempted the rights of local governments to regulate firearms. In fact, most states in the country, most of the legislatures, have passed laws prohibiting any local action in this area whatsoever. And those laws were adopted at the behest of the NRA. In California, fortunately, we do have, local governments do have local authority and have adopted many innovative laws to reduce gun violence.
And you mentioned California. What about New York?
In New York, local governments are able to adopt strong gun laws as well, and New York City has done that.
Okay. According to an article in U.S. News, we looked at statistics on firearms. In 1969, the commission created by Lyndon Johnson estimated that Americans owned 90 million firearms, with half of all households owning at least one weapon. And then if we look at 2011, Americans owned more guns, an estimated 270 million, but around 45% less. 45% of households had one weapon. So it's that seems to suggest that there hasn't really been a spike in gun ownership, but, you know, are we just focused more on gun violence than we used to be, do you think, Juliet?
Well, gun violence definitely has increased, and gun ownership has decreased. So what we're seeing is that there are fewer American households. I think the estimate is between 35% and 45%. Fewer American households own guns, but often those households own a lot of guns. So you see some gun owners who have multiple firearms, so that accounts for the dramatic increase. Gun violence reached its peak in 1993 and has declined significantly since then, fortunately, but is still at very unacceptable levels.
And again, we're taking your calls at 866-798-TALK. We have full lines. This topic obviously brings up a lot of emotion as well. But I will still give the number 866-798-TALK. And the email is feedback@yourcallradio.org. Let's take some callers then. And we will go to Lark in San Francisco.
Good morning. Thank you.
Hi.
First, I want to say that I am coming from the perspective of a rid the world of guns type attitude, but I understand, you know, that's maybe not exactly workable. So here's my question. I do understand intellectually the right to bear arms, no matter how much I don't like it, and, you know, for hunters and so on. But what I really have a hard time wrapping my mind around, and I'm, you know, like to try to see the other perspective, is why the NRA, what their feeling is around not having a ban on assault rifles. I'm assuming one of their arguments would be is the old slippery slope thing. Anyway, thanks so much for your show, and I'll listen. I'll hang up now.
Thank you, Lark. Thank you so much. So this assault weapons and assault rifles issue, Philip, you talked about semantics earlier with our producer, Ali Butner, and that words can get in the way of meaningful solutions. So what do you make of the assault rifles ban and the NRA resisting it?
I'd like to get back to the caller's question about ridding the world of guns, and or statement, rather. And I need to point out I'm not a member of the NRA.
Right.
I don't agree with a lot of what the NRA does, nor the actions that they take to influence our, not only our U.S. federal congressional representatives and senators, but also their influence in state and local politics as well. I think the rules, regulations, and laws need to be determined by the people and not by special interests. As far as assault weapons, and as Hannah said, yeah, I think there's semantics surrounding having a constructive dialogue, being able to bring all ideas and beliefs to the table and discuss them in an intelligent manner so that we can come to resolution on this increasing problem. And phrases such as gun control or weapons bans are showstoppers to gun rights advocates.
They hear them, they immediately shut down.
Yeah, a wall is built immediately. And I think it's incumbent upon our politicians to approach the situation with guile and cleverness and recognize these key terms that immediately stop people from having a constructive dialogue about it. And that's something that I sent to my senators and my congressional rep in the Responsible Firearms Ownership Framework for legislation that I sent to them. I opened up with a couple of paragraphs on semantics. And it's time to get past these hard terms, move to something that we can come to the table, agree upon, and then move it forward. And as far as an assault weapons ban, at this point, I think it's like trying to put water back behind a broken dam. There's so many that are out there, and if you outlaw these now and require people to turn them in, they're not going to do it. So what are you going to do in in response to that? Arrest them and put them in prisons and further enrich a bloated prison system already for people who believed it was their constitutional right to own that weapon. Now, And when I get to the lawmaking and the cleverness and guile that needs to go into it, there's so many things that can be done at the state and local level to limit where these firearms can be used. The federal government can limit the types of ammunition available and regulate firearm stores. You know, the shooting the other day, I think it was yesterday in Kentucky, a guy killed two or three people. He went out and bought that weapon at a pawn shop that day. You know, situation like that is untenable. You should not be able to buy a firearm at a pawn shop.
I think that was in St. Louis, Missouri.
I think.
Right. Sure. And Julie,
so,
yeah.
Yeah. So just, I don't think that's the approach to take at this point. There's more creative things that can be done to limit the use of these weapons and keep them in the hands of those who want to own them and make sure that those owners are responsible for those weapons.
So, Juliet, what do you have to say about the idea that an assault weapons ban is basically meaningless because, or at least very, very, very hard to attain?
Well, I would completely disagree with that, but if I could just back up a little and respond to some of the other points that were raised. First, I'm really happy that Mr. Young is speaking out as a gun owner. I think the voices of gun owners have not been heard, and they've been drowned out by the NRA leadership. The NRA leadership does not represent the general public, nor even its own members, when it comes to support for gun laws. There was a poll recently about support for laws requiring universal background checks. Those are background checks on all gun purchasers, which is not what we have now. Under current law, under current federal law, only licensed federally licensed firearms dealers are required to conduct background check on gun purchasers.
It's one of the things that Obama talked about yesterday.
That's right. So that's a glaring loophole in our national laws. A recent poll showed that 96% of the American public support a law requiring universal background check. And of that 96%, 74% of NRA members also support that law, as well as 87% of other gun owners. So I think it's really important that gun owners speak out, and I'm happy that that's happening today. As far as the Second Amendment, that's another big issue, and there's a lot of misinformation out there about the meaning and scope of the Second Amendment. In 2008, the U.S. Supreme Court issued of an opinion called the Heller decision, which struck down Washington, D.C.'s handgun ban. And in that case, the court held for the first time that the Second Amendment guarantees an individual right to possess firearms. But it was a very narrow holding. And first, one thing that's important to understand is that it was a complete reversal of prior Supreme Court holdings. So this was a completely new view of the law. And the court held that law-abiding, responsible citizens have a right to possess a handgun in the home for self-defense. So it's a narrow right. It's not an absolute right. The court listed several types of laws that it said would be presumptively lawful under the Second Amendment, including those prohibiting felons and the mentally ill from having guns, and those regulating commercial sellers of firearms and prohibiting the possession of military-style weapons. So the Second Amendment is not an obstacle to any of the types of laws that are under consideration. As far as an assault weapons ban goes, as you mentioned earlier, my organization was formed in response to an assault weapon massacre. So, and in that case, the shooter obtained his assault weapons from Nevada because they were already illegal in California. So he traveled to Nevada, bought his assault weapons at a gun show, and then came back into California and used those to slaughter innocent people.
And you were there.
That's right. I was fortunately not in the law firm where the shooting occurred, but my former law firm was several floors down, so I was there that day, and it made me realize that gun violence can happen any place, anytime, even in a beautiful downtown office building. So the assault weapons ban in California, it's great to have state laws, and California has the strongest laws in the nation, but we do need uniform laws, because without strong uniform federal laws, it's easy for people to evade strong state laws.
Okay, we're hearing from many people on the lines here who are gun owners, who know people who are gun owners. So let's go to the lines. Let's talk to Jody in San Francisco. Hi, Jody.
Hi. I was just going to reiterate exactly what you just said, Miss. Everything about, like, uniformity, having uniformity between the states, super important. I was also going to say my father was in the military, has owned a rifle his entire life, my entire upbringing. Never was it an issue. I think, yes, the mental health and background check is extremely important. And also I wanted to mention, just as a mother and an artist, like the role of video games and some of the imagery that glamorizes and glorifies gun violence, I think it's, you know, a reiterating issue that we could just as a culture look at. I think if there were stronger bans on some of that media, it would be helpful.
Okay. Thank you, Jody. Let's go to another caller, John in Berkeley. Hi, John.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for this program. I find it rather ironic that it is occurring on the anniversary of the adoption of the 18th Amendment, another noble experiment in government control that failed. I am a NRA member, but I am not a firearms owner. I'm a disabled Marine Corps veteran who's been diagnosed with PTSD, and I made a decision along with my family to give my firearms to a family member. That said, I do encounter among my friends and family a number of people who do own firearms and can assist me if I need them. I'd like to point out here one thing that's I think that we could agree on, and that is the enhancement that is used for firearms in the commission of a crime. About 30 years ago, a law was passed that basically added a 10-year sentence if you use a firearm in the commission of a violent crime. I think those enhancements should be increased, in many cases, to 20 years. I also think that if we end this failed war on drugs, which to me is an example of another noble experiment gone wrong, we could free up enough prison space to put these people in. The last thing I want to say here is that there are people who are very concerned about this issue because they see the encroachment of government on their lives and their liberties. And my question would be, do you wish to have the government controlling all means of coercive force? Thank you for this program.
Thank you, John. Lots of points raised there. I think we should just keep going through the callers because we are getting an immense number of callers. And we'll talk about your points, John, in a little bit. Let's go to Bill in San Mateo. Welcome to your call, Bill.
Good morning. I, too, am an NRA and, or a hunter and a former NRA member. I canceled my membership when I realized that the NRA was no longer representing individual hunters in particular and sportsmen, those of us who shoot clays and other recreational shooting activities. But rather they were representing what I would call a sclerotic, uncompromising view on their interpretation of the Second Amendment. It's also worth remembering that the first four words in the Second Amendment are a well-regulated militia. And I just raised the two questions that I think are at the heart of this debate. One is, why does any citizen need to own an AK-47? And two, why does any citizen need to have a magazine that'll shoot 50 to 100 bullets? And just one other thought, to the extent that the answer to that is to protect against government tyranny, then I think you have to ask the question, well, why can't we own nuclear weapons? Sounds crazy, but it's right along that slippery slope.
All right, Bill, thank you. Thank you for your call, and thank you to John. Philip, a lot to respond to there.
Yes. First, I'd like to address the Second Amendment question because it kind of embraces both callers' questions. And true, it's a single sentence that And it opens with a well-regulated militia that, you know, allows U.S. citizens to own weapons. But I think gun rights extremists tend to discard the rest of the Constitution. They ignore the opening of the sentence of a well-regulated militia. And Article 2, Paragraph 2 of the Constitution allows the president to be the commander-in-chief of that specific well-regulated militia when it's called to service. So those who argue that the president doesn't have the right to impose upon the Second Amendment, they're incorrect. All right, there's constitutionality that allows it. And the extremists tend to throw away the rest of the Constitution because, most importantly, in the preamble, all U.S. citizens are guaranteed a right to their security and their happiness.
And can you hold that thought, Philip? Sorry to cut you off, but we are heading up towards a break. This is Your Call. I'm Hannah Baba. You're listening to KALW, and we'll be right back.
This is Your Call on KALW San Francisco. To take part in our conversation, please call 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or if you prefer to write rather than call, our email inbox is feedback@yourcallradio.org. Send a message, ask a question, leave a comment. feedback@yourcallradio.org.
For those of you joining us now, I'm Hanat Baba, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. We're podcasting our show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows there and sign up for our newsletter to find out what's coming up next. Tomorrow's our weekly media roundtable, where we speak to journalists about coverage of the week's news. Monday is Inauguration Day. At Your Call's normal hour, 10 a.m., we'll be tuned to NPR coverage of President Barack Obama's inauguration into his second term in office. At 11 a.m., Rose Aguilar will come in with a live one-hour program in response to the inauguration. But today, are gun owners ready for new laws to prevent gun violence, even if the NRA isn't? Today, we're opening the lines, and we have been hearing from many gun owners, ex-gun owners, NRA members, ex-NRA members, to hear what kind of change they're ready for in the wake of the massacre at Newtown, in the wake of President Obama's proposals yesterday. And you can join the conversation. Give us a call, 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or you can email us your comment at feedback@yourcallradio.org, or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. And joining us are Juliet Leftwich, legal director of the Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence, and Philip Young, a colonel who served nearly 30 years in the active Army and Army Reserve, and author of The Responsible Firearms Ownership Act, authored by Philip Young, with us here in studio. And before the break, we had gotten a number of calls, all of them, you know, very involved, very interesting. And Philip, we cut you off there while you were responding about the Second Amendment.
If I could, I'd like to get back to the well-regulated part of it. And what I had recommended to our senators and my congressional representative were that we do start imposing regulations upon firearms owners so that we can add responsibility to that line. And some of the things I've recommended include licensing of individuals to possess firearms, and not a single license, which is a broad stroke. And I'll use a automobile analogy throughout this discussion, but different tiers of ownership licensing based upon the type of weapon you want to own. Mm. Secondly, a mandated registration of firearms. And this is something that gun ownership extremists rail against. But to me, as a responsible gun owner, if I'm going to possess firearms, I don't mind law enforcement knowing that I own those weapons. And through these two measures of licensing and registration, we can address the streamlining across state lines, because this then becomes a federal database that is shared by states. Thirdly, the purchase of ammunition would have strict requirements. You couldn't just buy ammunition in bulk. You know, and the ammunition would need to be ordered in advance. You'd need to produce your license and your registration for the weapon that you're buying the ammunition for. And now you're putting controls on the deadly part of firearms ownership, okay? A firearm in itself is not deadly, and that's why I think people should be allowed to own them, okay? But when you discharge that weapon, and a lot of people don't realize this who haven't fired a gun, is unlike a car that you are sitting in the driver's seat controlling all aspects of that car, when you fire that bullet, it has no brakes. It has no steering wheel. And even if you're in a home protecting your own home and you fire bullets at a suspected intruder, those bullets are going to go through walls. And if you have kids on the other sides of those walls, they're in danger as well.
Juliet, let me go to you. As you heard those callers call in, were you hopeful of gun owners kind of coming towards the middle? And we've heard a lot of criticism of the NRA from gun owners.
Yes, I'm very encouraged by that. And I really hope that gun owners will continue to speak out, and to speak out loudly, because the only person we're hearing from now is the president of the NRA. We are not hearing from gun owners. And as President Obama said yesterday, Congress needs to hear from people all around America, not just from the usual suspects, not just from people like me who are involved in gun violence prevention organizations, or not just people in New York City. He needs to hear, Congress needs to hear from people all around the country, because they do support these policies. But just stepping back one second, I would really like to applaud Mr. Young for everything you just said before about the type of policies that you support, and I agree 100% with registration and with licensing and with ammunition regulations. So I'm very pleased to hear that.
Okay, let's go to another caller. The calls are coming in. Let's go to Lisa in Oakland. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to your call.
Hi. Yeah, I find this a little disturbing. I appreciate that there's a movement towards regulating guns, but this discussion to me seems to really miss the picture. It'd be kind of like discussing whether there's a certain amount of acceptable rape that we need to accept. I mean, violence in the U.S. is epidemic, and we live in a highly militarized country where not only our gun owners have enormous guns, or have guns period, but so do the military, so do the police, and incarceration is part of that militarization of our society. So until we start discussing having a nonviolent society and what causes some of those, having why we are such a violent society, like capitalism, racism, you know, all those other things that make the U.S. such a violent society, and the world, but the U.S. in particular, I find it really, it's crazy to me to discuss whether, how much we should be regulating violence and then perpetuating it by sending people back to prison.
Thank you, Lisa. There's an email that kind of connects with that. An emailer says, first, we're only discussing this issue because many young white children were murdered. And the main reasons the NRA is so violently supporting owning weapons is also racism, the fear of black people being armed and white people not. And if you don't address that, you are not getting to the root of the issue. And let's go to another email also from Taylor. He says, interestingly, the NRA's first response to the Newtown massacre was to suggest repressing First Amendment rights by restricting the content of video games. An earlier caller also advocated scrutiny of video games content. This person discloses that they are not a video gamer. But what he calls or she calls the strict constructionists or originalists, who claim that the Second Amendment is sacred and that it confers limitless individual rights to possess any firearm, expect everyone else to give up their First Amendment rights just so they can be free to play with lethal weapons of war and plot insurrections. And is this person on the line? Taylor? No, not with us. So the question, Juliet, of racism and these deeper social justice issues that often lead to the gun violence, do you think that's being discussed enough?
No, I agree that it's not being discussed enough. Gun violence is a very complicated issue, and there are a lot of factors. My organization focuses on the laws because we're lawyers and because the laws are so grossly inept at this point in our country. You look at the United States, we have more guns than any other industrialized nation. We have the weakest laws of all industrialized nations, and we have the highest rate of gun violence and death. So to us, there are many factors that cause this, clearly socioeconomic factors, but we can deal with the laws. They're a much easier issue to deal with, and they will help. So I think we need to start with the laws.
I'm in complete agreement with Juliet that the firearms laws are extremely complex, and the caller does have a valid point. However, we need to take care of one problem at a time and not try and do a broad stroke that makes the United States a utopia immediately, you know, just by getting rid of guns. It's a comprehensive approach that the caller described that needs to be used to address all of the social issues which impact violence in the U.S.
Let's talk about one of the elephants in the room, mental health. was definitely talked about by President Obama. Lots of discussion about it since the massacre. And I'm wondering, what if people are indeed talking about it, and what kind of measures need to be taken in that regard. Juliet, what do you support in terms of background checks? Should they include your mental health? To what extent should they be looking into your medical records? It can get pretty dicey.
Right. Mental health, it's a huge problem and a hugely complicated issue. So as I sit here today, I cannot say what I believe all the solutions are. It's something that we're looking into. We're going to be speaking with mental health professionals. There are concerns about privacy issues, about stigmatization. So it's a complicated issue, but it is an enormous problem. And our laws need to be reviewed. Under federal law, people already who have been involuntarily committed to a mental institution or have been found not guilty by reason of insanity of a crime are already prohibited from possessing firearms. But that threshold is very high. And even with that threshold, states are not providing that information, not providing the identity of those people even to the federal NICS database. So even for those people are not being prohibited because the information is not even in the federal database.
Hmm. The
president has included close to a dozen healthcare related issues as they pertain to gun violence, and they're among the executive actions he's going to take. I agree with them completely, and an additional item that I put forth in the act that I drafted, and with the additions from my sister, who happens to be an attorney, Rebecca Young, she also added mental state disqualifications. And part of the licensing procedure will be training, formal training, firearms training. And just to give the NRA their piece of the pie of this, they could actually become the proponent for that firearms training and do the certification for instructors and teachers and, you know, make their dime from holding such classes and courses. But also through the course of this training and instruction, if it's a rigorous and well-regulated instruction course, I firmly believe instructors will be able to see if an individual has the mental capacity or incapacity and should be disqualified from licensing. And, you know, I'm a scuba diver, and we go through very rigorous certification procedures. And this is a recreational sport that one would wonder why you need certification. And it's to protect the individual and to see if the individual has the mental capacity to be in a situation that could be psychologically compromising.
And you suggest a database that only licensed psychiatrists or psychologists may make entries into, and the only entry allowed will be the individual's name, date of birth, city of birth, last four digits of a social security number, and the statement prohibited from owning or possessing firearms of any kind. Who have you submitted this to, and what have the reactions been?
As I stated, I sent them to our two senators, our two distinguished senators who represent California, and my congressional representative up in the first district, Mike Thompson. As you might imagine, you know, how I submitted them is through the governmental email site, and I got a robo mail back from one of the senators and Mike Thompson. And after I sent them the week after the Newtown shooting. And my sister...
What did the robo email say?
Thanks for your concern.
Okay. Anything else? Any other reactions, responses?
You know, I don't remember it. I was somewhat disappointed, but I at the same time, it wasn't less than what I expected. And I've written them before on important issues, and you typically get a robo mail that acknowledges your input to the matter, and they're seriously looking at what can be done about it.
That's Philip Young, a colonel who served nearly 30 years in the active Army and Army Reserve, and he is a graduate of the U.S. Army War College. He is a gun owner and author of the Responsible Firearms Ownership Act, and he submitted it, if they're listening to us, to our Congress P people. So you might want to respond to him, please. And with us also is Juliet Leftwich, legal director of the Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence. And her organization was formed in the wake of an assault that she was present at 101 California Street in downtown San Francisco in 1993. And we're still taking your calls. The number is 866-798-TALK, 866-798-8255. And we're also taking your emails and your comments at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And here's an email from Chuck. He's asking someone to comment on, he said, I heard somewhere recently that having a firearm registration request was denied in itself. What I understand is that having a firearm registration request denied in itself is a felony, but one that is rarely prosecuted. Does anybody have, Juliet?
I think what he's referring to is that when people fill out applications to purchase firearms, they're asked to certify that they are not a prohibited person, they're not a convicted felon or otherwise in a prohibited class. People lie on those forms and the purchase is denied, but there is very little prosecution of the fact that they lied on that form. And I think that's something that President Obama is looking into and is going to urge ATF to heighten enforcement of that law and increase those prosecutions.
Okay. Again, 866-798-8255 is the number to call if you'd like to reach us with a comment or question for one of our guests. Much of the gun violence happens with guns that were actually legally obtained. And I'm wondering, Julie, you cite that 40% of all guns purchased are from private dealers rather than from gun stores, and that the customers in those cases get no background check. So what does that say about the current state of our gun laws and the enforcement of those laws? You know, even the laws that are on the books aren't being enforced. So what to do? Will President Obama's call out yesterday kind of magically, you know, enforce these laws? What's going
to
happen?
Well, first, just to clarify that the private sale loophole, so it's private sellers as opposed to federally licensed dealers, the difference in who is who the seller is. With that, that's one of the loopholes in our federal laws. We have closed that loophole in California. So in California, if you, for example, as a non-firearms dealer wanted to sell your gun to me, we would go to a firearms dealer. You would give your gun to the dealer. That dealer would conduct a background check on me, fill out all the paperwork. There'd be a 10-day waiting period, and then I would be given the gun from the licensed dealer. So we have closed that loophole in California, but most states have not. And so it's very easy for criminals and for mentally ill people and underage kids to get guns easily. So, I mean, there's nothing, President Obama's announcement, it's not a magic pill. Obviously, these laws have to go through Congress, and that's going to be a big fight. Yes. Yes.
And that's not even counting the under-the-table kind of dealings that we may have in gang-infested areas and all the, you know, crime-ridden areas in our Bay Area, whether it be places like East Oakland or the Bayview. How do you count? How do you measure gun sales in those areas? And are they at all measured? Do you know? No?
Well, the Department of Justice, if you're talking about legal sales, only legal sales are going
right.
to be recorded.
Right.
So if they're illegal sales, they're
you,
not.
You don't know. Right.
No. So the Department of Justice keeps track of the legal sales. But part of the problem in those communities is that because states surrounding California have such weak laws, it's very easy for guns to be trafficked into California from outside the states.
Hmm.
Well, and I think that leads credence to the requirement to start registering weapons. This way they're in a federal database. You know, and to fall back on an automobile analogy, you know, show me the Carfax.
Absolutely.
Show me the weapons facts. You know, who's the manufacturer? What arms dealers has it gone through? And yeah, you know, as time goes by, obviously you can't magically just sweep up all these weapons that are being illegally transferred. Okay, but responsible firearms owners are going, when it comes time to dispose of their weapons, they're going to do so in a responsible manner. You know, the guy who called in earlier, the former Marine, who turned his weapons over because he and his family agreed it was a good idea, you know, and other people have those weapons. I applaud him for doing that, but at the same time, that transfer of weapons needs to get annotated somewhere. And in the future, obviously, there's no mechanism now for that caller to do that. You know, he's just putting them in a safe place. But I think the laws we need to move towards are the registration of firearms
and then a
federal database to track them.
Julia,
if I could just make one point about that, that I completely agree with the registration, but to show you how far we have to go under federal law actually prohibits the creation of a national registry. Because of the NRA, that is codified in our federal law, saying that we cannot do that. And under federal law, purchaser records are destroyed within 24 hours because there is this pervasive paranoia about government records of gun ownership, which is crazy. And I agree completely with the car analogy and that we should keep track of gun ownership. And we do in California to a greater extent than most states, but we do not have a true registry as we do for
a federal registry.
And as an individual who has owned firearms, I'm not paranoid about it. And I think individuals who have a paranoia about the government owning or knowing that you own weapons, you probably shouldn't be in possession of those weapons. You know, and I understand that statute is in place, but that's one of the laws that makes this a complex issue, and that needs to be changed. And I just want to point out that in the framework that I proposed for Responsible Firearms Ownership Act, I also stipulated that political action committees or special interest groups need to be prohibited from funding politicians in Washington, so that you remove that monetary component that inspires politicians to vote against doing what's logical.
Do you see that happening with the power of the NRA?
Again, well...
How can you think that will happen?
It's one of the broader issues that needs to be undertaken by Congress. I think, you know, all political influence, special interests in the form of money going into our representatives corrupts their ability to represent their constituency. Mm-hmm. And the constituency needs the power of the people needs to unite to ensure that we maintain our democracy.
But you're not getting responses from your Congress people to your act.
So
how are we going to do that? How can people do that?
You know, one of the beautiful things about the democracy in the United States is I have the power to vote. I have the power to organize people and say, you know what, the folks who are supposed to represent us in Washington, D.C., are not listening to us. They're listening to the special interests. Let's get out, vote, and change those people out. And that's the beauty of our nation. We can do that. You know, we don't need to get all excited and scream and yell and raise our arms. You know, congressional reps have 2 years. Senators have 6. And not to get on an aside, you know, I'm an advocate for term limits. And this way people can term out. And you see how effective that is in the state of California.
Right. Let's go to another caller. I think this will be our last caller of the day. Dennis in San Carlos. Welcome to your call.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
Perfect. I am a licensed gun owner, outdoorsman, have been my entire life. I'm in agreement with that the NRA needs to start giving up some ground. The fact that they don't want to give an inch is a problem. I'm not a member of the NRA. As far as a national gun registry, here's my issue with that and the comment that the gentleman made a few minutes ago concerning if you are a licensed gun holder or a responsible gun owner, I believe how he worded it, that if you question a national registry, then you probably shouldn't own a weapon. I completely disagree with that. My issue, well, I'm not sure where this needs to go. But I do know that if a law was passed and they came and said, any firearms you own need to be brought into the registry. If you're caught without them, you will be, I'm not sure what, arrested, fined, however it reads. I still would not bring my weapons in and register them. I'm just not going to do it. I don't trust the government. I don't trust that the government isn't going to come along and impose a law that says, hey, guess what? You know what? We didn't like assault weapons, so we're taking those, give them up. And guess what? Now, we don't like that shotgun you own either, because somebody just walked into a library, movie theater, school, whatever, with a off-the-shelf sportsman's weapon and managed to wipe out six people.
Okay.
I don't know what to do about a registry. I just don't know what to do about it. I myself would not register my firearms because I'm not going to give the government that information to know that if they change their mind, they're suddenly going to go, hey, guess what? Give them up.
Thank you, Dennis. We only have a couple of minutes left. So in response to that, Philip, you also include kind of your perfect world now in terms of gun ownership and firearms? What would it be?
Yeah. The concern he expressed is relatively common. I hear it quite a bit. And I think it's reflective upon the American people's disenchantment with how our government is functioning. And we as a people, we are the government. And a lot of people overlook that or forget it. And unless you go out and vote, unless you go out to town halls, unless you write your senators and congressional representatives, they don't know the impact of their decision-making unless the people tell them.
So, Dennis, tell your congresspeople. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cut you off.
Sure.
We are almost done. Juliet Leftwich, a final comment in less than 20 seconds?
Well, just very quickly about the power of the NRA, I agree that we need campaign finance reform laws. But one interesting fact is in this last election, the NRA spent $11 million and 99% of the candidates to whom they contributed lost. So they do not have, they're not the all-powerful organization that they used to be. And people and politicians need to understand that.
Thank you, Juliet Leftwich, legal director of the Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence. Also with us was Philip Young, and we will have a link to his Responsible Firearms Act. And this is what's coming up tomorrow. Thank you for listening. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss coverage of the elections in Israel. We'll also be joined by journalist Trevor Aronson to discuss his new book, The Terror Factory, Inside the FBI's Manufactured War on Terrorism. Join us at 10 or email feedback at yourcallradio.org. Where did you see the best reporting this week? It's Your Call with Rose Aguilar and you.
Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Raz is on and Ali Budner produced the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.